Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for November 12th, 2023. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. Happy to be with you. We'll be talking all about AEW's Full Gear pay-per-view that is coming up. So we're going to do a full rundown, match by match, of that show. Really excited to bring that to you here. I was on last night with Wade Keller, Torch Editor, on the Wade Keller post-show for AEW Collision. Took some calls and emails on that show, so that was a pleasure. Was happy to be able to join him. I know I'm not able to join him very often simply because I don't get the opportunity to watch shows live very often, as I've spoken about here at times in the past. So it was great to have an opportunity to talk to him and talk to the callers about Collision leading into Full Gear coming up next Saturday night. So if you want to join us, we're talking Full Gear. It's going to be 515-605-9345. I want to press 1 to chat with us. I'll have PWTorch.com contributor Kevin Catani along here soon, and we'll start that Full Gear preview. You can also email us at any time, WNIALivecast@gmail.com. So without further ado, I want to bring Kevin along on board with us here. Kevin, pleasure to have you along again. Good to talk to you about Full Gear tonight.
Hey there, Greg. Thanks so much for having me. Can you hear me okay?
I gotcha. You sound great.
Oh, perfect, perfect. I just got a new phone and was messing with the pairing and all that like 15 minutes ago. So,
okay, yeah, I got you loud and clear. So that's good, and gets us off to a good start here tonight. Full Gear is next Saturday night live from the Kia Forum in Los Angeles, technically Inglewood outside of Los Angeles. Want to start with the pre-show match. I don't usually talk about the pre-show matches here on this show, Kevin, but I think it's worth talking about. It's MJF and a partner to be announced versus the Guns for the ROH tag titles. Now, the last time MJF was in a situation like this, he defended the titles by himself, defeated the Righteous, and retained the tag titles. Of course, Adam Cole, his partner, is out with an injury. So what are your expectations for this? Do you expect MJF to go at it alone once again, or do you expect him, you know, I think somewhat of expected maybe a member of the Acclaimed, but they were taken out due to injury recently, so they may not be available. But what are your expectations for this? Does MJF go at it alone again?
You know, I can certainly see that being the case. And actually, as I'm thinking about it, Greg, my question to you, where are the rules on tag team champions losing a partner and when they have to relinquish belts and when they don't? Because I think that's a very sloppy thing across all the promotions, that in some cases they immediately have to forfeit them, but in others, you can hang on to it.
Well, as long as it plays into the storyline, Kevin, I think that's where we draw
course,
the line. Clearly this one does. Yes. But I think you make a good point. I mean, how long Adam Cole is going to be out for a while, just had ankle surgery. And so, you know, do you have MJF lose, which you probably don't want to have because he's in the unique position of also being the AEW champion? So having him lose to, I mean, look at the contenders for the ROH tag titles. It's the Righteous. It's, you know, even the Guns, maybe the Guns win. I don't know. But I think there is some hesitancy to have MJF lose, even in a two-on-one situation. And, you know, I think also part of it is Adam Cole and MJF as ROH tag champs was sort of this mechanism to move forward the MJF-Adam Cole story. And, you know, what was going to be the end of this story? Was it going to be a breakup that led to them losing the ROH tag titles? Whatever that is, Tony Khan seems to be delaying that, kind of punting on that until Adam Cole returns. We've seen him do that with situations like this before when Jade Cargill was TBS champion and he wanted Chris Statlander to be the one to beat her, and Statlander got hurt, was on the shelf for quite a while, and he just had Jade Cargill running in place. Rather than alter the story, have somebody else beat Jade, he waited and waited and waited, probably waited too long to have Jade Cargill lose, but in the end, he got what he wanted, which was Chris Statlander to beat Jade Cargill, and I just wonder if that's happening again here, where we're sort of on that treadmill with MJF and the ROH titles, waiting for Adam Cole to come back to hit the next beat in the story.
Yeah, you know, and as I was listening to you talk, you know, unfortunately, the mind of Tony Khan, it's a fool's errand to try to figure out what's going through his brain at any one point. But I think if you want Adam Cole and MJF to be the ROH tag champs, you can always put the belts back on them. And I almost wonder, do they saddle him with they put a mystery partner in and have the mystery partner eat the pin? So then MJF isn't technically losing. They get the belts off of them while Adam Cole finishes recovering. And, you know, I think in a lot of ways the Guns have a momentum that giving them titles, you know, in not unlike some of the recent title switches in WWE, where let the smarmy heels have a belt for a little while and let that enhance their act a little bit. And I really don't think MJF is losing anything by not having that title. And as I was thinking about potential partners, I was thinking maybe shake it up a little bit and have Adam Cole essentially convince Roddy to come out and do it.
I was thinking Roderick Strong as a way, you know, he screws basically MJF, Adam Cole out of the title. Maybe in a way that gives him plausible deniability, but I also thought of Roddy Strong in that role, perhaps losing in some way.
I think he's someone that
costs MJF.
Yeah, he fits the current story as far as being the third man in that triangle. He can lose because he hasn't really done a whole lot on AEW yet anyway. And yes, it builds in that extra wrinkle of, well, did he mean to do it? Did he not? Is he helping Adam? Is he not? I mean, I think it could give you some more angles to play off of when you eventually maybe want to put those back on Adam Cole and MJF to then get that story into the next chapter.
And I do think it's more likely that whether or not MJF has a partner, I certainly think it's more likely that the Guns, you know, based on – and that's the other thing, too, here. You know, the Guns are now part of Bullet Club Gold, and MJF in the main event of this show is facing Jay White for the AEW title, and the Guns are henchmen of Jay White. So what kind of role does that play in this pre-show match? I do think it's more likely the Guns win here than the Righteous winning when MJF previously defended the ROH titles by himself on a pre-show. But I do wonder now of the storyline of the Guns facing MJF on the pre-show while MJF also has to face Jay White later on. What kind of role does that relationship play in this pre-show match?
Yeah, well, I suppose as the saying goes, Greg, time will tell.
Indeed. Another match we'll talk about here is Hikaru Shida versus Toni Storm, timeless Toni Storm for the AEW Women's Championship. We have a wrench thrown into the plans a little bit with the AEW acquisition of Mariah May from Stardom, and she is playing a big fan of Toni Storm. So Toni certainly has a lot of momentum, and I think there's a good chance she wins the title here just to fully capitalize on that momentum. Mariah May is out there. What role will she play? Will she help Toni Storm win? Will she somehow cost Toni Storm the match? I love Hikaru Shida. I love almost everything about her. But whenever she's champion, it never feels like she's the focus of the division. And that's not her fault. She's been champion now, what, 3 times? AEW Women's Champion, and it just never felt like they've gotten behind her. Whenever she's been champion, it always feels like somebody else, whether it was Britt Baker or in this case Toni Storm, there was always someone else to kind of take the spotlight away from her, and it's disappointing because I'm a huge Shida fan, and I think this is going to be a really good match.
Yeah, and I would agree with you, and I almost, as you're talking, it kind of reminds me in a similar way to to Bianca Belair, where Sheeta as a chaser seems to have more momentum than Sheeta the chasee. Mm-hmm. And again, that's not necessarily her fault, but I think, in her case, it is what it is. And so I think, it's not, I think certainly Toni Storm has proven she can carry the belt and she can be an effective champion. I tell you, the one thing that tickles me about the match is less about the match and more. I don't know if you've seen the graphics for the match cards. I was looking that up earlier today. And in the match card, it's Toni Storm in black and white in a full color image otherwise, which I thought was humorous.
Yes. They're trying to make as many creative black and white decisions as they can with Toni Storm and try to utilize that as often as possible.
Well, they are certainly leaning into it. But, I think, as you pointed out, Sheeta has also proven that she can be an effective champion, when they need her to. And you know what? If they want to start building her into the most championship reigns in the AEW women's division, well, she certainly got a head start over a lot of the other women. So she can lose to Toni Storm and then chase again and potentially win it again next year or so. And then now she's a four-time champion. So,
yeah, I think you're right. She is better on the chase than she is as champion, unfortunately. Toni Storm and Mariah May and their relationship, and I think maybe we'll see a little bit more of that teased on television this week before the pay-per-view, but that's something to keep an eye on here. We'll do one more match, then we'll go to the phones. I see Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland's up, as well as Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, so we're going to get to them in just a moment. But we have Sting, Darby Allin, and Adam Copeland with Ric Flair against Christian Cage, Luchasaurus, and Nick Wayne. So I'm curious, Kevin, your take on Ric Flair coming into AEW and being a character, I guess, through March. He's going to be a frequent presence on television. So I'm curious as to, my temptation here is to say, based on history, Ric Flair turns on Sting and the heels win, and I wouldn't be shocked if that happened. But what's your take on AEW's acquisition of Ric Flair and how they plan to use him?
In the big picture, I don't know. I read a couple of very interesting articles from other wrestling beat writers that basically, their main idea was why, essentially. Like, sure, you'll get the legend pop from him, but, for a lot of the stuff that has come out about him and as much as AEW seems to want to distance itself from a lot of the malarkey that, has followed some of the older legends, if you will. It just seems like, they're, in a lot of ways, they have good momentum, and in some ways as a company, they're trying to keep their head above water. And to me, this is just something that you can still tell a storyline with Sting and not use him. It's not my money and it's not my airtime, so I guess my opinion doesn't mean a whole lot in that frame of mind. But, I think I was chatting with a couple of buddies about Bret Hart and about how he was someone that seemed to, in his heyday, maybe take his gimmick a little too seriously. And I think Ric Flair fits that bill too, where, it would be tough to separate Ric, the guy on the golf course on a Tuesday morning, from Rick on TV on, Saturday night at 8 o'clock. Like, I think he's the same guy. And I think in that way, when will he ever not want the spotlight? And I think for a company that's already being critiqued for recycling a lot of veteran talent from several companies, here's another one that probably won't take any bumps, but is still going to occupy airtime. I personally see it as a net negative, but if it sells tickets to a couple of pay-per-views between now and then, and that's what Tony wants, then fine, I guess. But I could also, see as they build out this Sting farewell tour that as like the last final act of defiance, Rick does something dastardly to cement the fact that he's the dirtiest player in the game, but I really kind of keep hoping they're going to let Sting ride out in the sunset in his own terms, but knowing the kind of creative freedom that most of the wrestlers have in AEW, I also wouldn't be surprised if Sting was behind pushing the storyline that could ultimately lead to him getting screwed in his final go around the track here. So I guess, again, we'll have to wait and see. But, I guess I wouldn't have given my vote to signing him if I was in that boardroom being asked.
Hey, Rick, notorious for living his gimmick. It's what's gotten him in trouble sometimes as well. So, you know, to that point, certainly agreed there. You know, Tony Khan is a guy who has an immense amount of reverence for wrestling history. And certainly there is no more historic wrestler that you could bring in that's out there on the market than Ric Flair. Even though his utility at this point is questionable, right? He, you know, the promos that he cuts, they're not Ric Flair promos that we have come to know and love. He can't really wrestle as much as he'd probably like to. Maybe he takes bumps. But, you know, I think it's just Tony Khan recognizing that in Sting's last year, he may want to pay homage to Sting's history in the wrestling business. And you can't tell Sting's history in the wrestling business without Ric Flair, because Ric Flair has played a large part in Sting's history in WCW and in TNA even. So, you know, that part of me thinks that's a big reason he did it, as well as, you know, maybe there's some business benefit to having Ric Flair on your roster. I'm not really sure about that, but I mean, that's a big goal for AEW is to grow as a business. So yeah, I'm not thrilled about seeing Ric Flair on TV in 2023 every week, but if I squint, I can kind of see why Tony Khan did it. Even if as an on-air character, it might not be the best. What do you think about this match? I mean, Adam Copeland still pretty early in his AEW run, getting to team with Allin and Sting against Christian, Luchasaurus, and Nick Wayne, the heels. I mean, they've just done a fantastic job. But this could be one of those matches that we've seen with Sting and Darby Allin where it gets a little wild, gets a little out of control, people go through tables.
Yeah, I think all of the above. And I think if I was a betting person, I would say that Adam Copeland very much is looking for an excuse to prove his mettle in this new role, and not necessarily to show up his previous employer, but to say, hey, if any of you are worried, I've still got it, and watch me keep up with Darby Allin and Sting, and even Nick Wayne for that matter. I know a lot of those guys are very willing to put their bodies on the line, and I think Adam Copeland will want to prove that he can still roll. You know, I think from a strategic element, it certainly allows people to whet their appetite over an Edge. Dang it, I did it again. Adam Copeland v. Christian.
But we got to have a swear jar here. We put a quarter in there every time we do that.
And listen, keep my total going, and I will gladly contribute to a Venmo because it's going to be a tough habit to break. But
for sure,
you know, I think this is another way to get them in the same space without it being one-on-one, without blowing off anything big yet. I'm sure there's a lot of us with reverence to wrestling history that would love to see them together again. But Christian is playing such a fabulous heel that it's hard to imagine him having a reason to flip face. And
yeah,
Copeland, he is a natural heel in my opinion, but are they going to want to, you know, milk his face equity for a little bit longer before they do that? I don't know. But I think this is going to be a good match. There are certainly a couple of young guys who can take a lot of the more crazy bumps while the older guys can sort of be accessories to it. And I always just sort of like sort of the size dynamic differences. I think Luchasaurus is just such a monster, and Darby's tiny, and Nick is tiny, and, you know, there could be some fun dynamics that way too. So I think it's going to be a good match. I think the tail of the tape will be how crazy does Adam Copeland want to get physically, because I think there might be a desire for him to want to try to keep up, but also know your limits, and if you want to last a little bit, you know, you don't need to try to keep up with a Darby Allin, that's for sure.
Well, let's go to the phones, and our first call of the evening goes to, as it usually does, Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What's your first question for us?
First question is about this All In commercial or the ad that Tenney Fawn's been in with Daniel Bryan and others. Is this, like, Jim Cornette has speculated that the reason why there's more people, less people that show up than tickets sold is that fans just want to buy tickets and not show up for all, and do you think that's the case?
I've never heard of that. I've never heard of spending money for the sole purpose of not showing up. Seems like a waste of money to me. I don't know why anyone would do that. Kevin, do you see the psychology behind that?
I don't. Yeah, someone on a teacher's salary, I also am not in the game of being able to spend money on tickets and then just not show up to an event. I also know if we're considering the source, which is Mr. Cornette, I know that elaboration is something he's known for. But I also think there's ways to artificially inflate numbers that do not involve having to spend actual money to do it. I suppose anything's possible, but it doesn't make sense to me, no.
All right, Ryan, your second question for us.
Second question is on the NWA and the cocaine spot that aired during the pay-per-view. Has the Federation ever lost their TV deal because of something that was too controversial that aired on the programming?
Well, WWE almost did when they ran the gun angle on Monday Night Raw to the point where they had to apologize for it the next week. That's as close as I can come to a situation that is similar to what the NWA has done, which, for those who are unaware, Billy Corgan's NWA was very close to a deal with the CW, which is broadcast television. And they had done a spot on their pay-per-view where the Sinister Minister, amongst others, were doing drugs. And that, I guess, reached the higher-ups in CW. CW nixed the deal, and eventually NXT ended up with that very deal. So obviously a lot of people in NWA, rightly so, upset at Billy Corgan as the head. I mean, I'm not sure that he specifically came up with that spot, but you have to imagine everything that goes on NWA programming, ultimately the buck stops with your leader, and that is Billy Corgan in the NWA. So just an immense unforced error, Kevin, the likes of which I don't know that we've seen in this industry, at least for a very long time, because this was going to be a difference maker for the NWA, which has kind of struggled to reach a wider audience on YouTube and in other ways. I know they had their television for a time was a subscription based on, I believe it was, what was the app?
Wasn't it YouTube initially? Didn't they? Weren't they?
It was
on
YouTube,
the YouTube subscription?
And then it was, I think, Fight TV. And then I think they went back to YouTube. So, I mean, the CW is a big step up from any of those, really.
Sure.
So this is just, you feel for the people who are involved in this company that something like that could really change the trajectory for this company in such a negative way.
Yeah, it hurts my heart because I know – I'm certainly not a TV exec, and I'm certainly not the owner of a wrestling company, but I also know, having been involved in college sports and other sporting endeavors for a long time, don't make any risky moves till the ink's dry on the paper. And so I don't know why you couldn't have delayed a drug angle another 2 to 4 to 6 weeks till that deal is signed and then essentially ask for forgiveness, I guess. It seemed like a really, really big play. And then part of me wonders, was it a naivety to think, well, who cares about cocaine in 2023? Or was it literally they just didn't think it would work its way through the channels? And, of course, I chuckle at that because as a teacher, I always laugh when my students think that I don't talk to other teachers that they have and just sort of assume that. And I'm sure you encounter that in your own way, too. But it's like, Yeah, come on. That's just not a boneheaded. It's just a boneheaded move. And then I was going to say, I don't. I would have said, if a gun angle and literally having simulated sex in the middle of a ring don't get you thrown off a network, nothing will. But it sounds like illicit drugs are the drawing line. So at least now we have our boundary.
I suppose so. Let's hope the need never arises to consider crossing it. Ryan, back to you for your third and final question for us tonight.
Final question is on Damian Priest losing his briefcase last week, then getting it back from Adam Pearce. Kind of raw, and it seems like he's sort of reckless with the briefcase because he just left it behind after the New Day match, and the timekeeper took it back in a stage form. So is that something that Damian does, is he's reckless with the briefcase and doesn't watch ever too carefully that makes it easy to get stolen, or is that just a one-time event, do you think?
Are you talking like the storyline of what's going on?
Well, I don't know. I was just wondering, like, when you go to shows and people see Damian Priest wrestle with the briefcase, if he just leaves it behind all the time, he doesn't really look after it too well like he did on Monday.
He left it behind. You know, I think that's everybody has their own way of dealing with it. Usually we're used to situations where the wrestlers carry it around very closely. I'm not really sure what the actual rules are regarding it. I don't know if possession is 9/10 of the law here, and if Damian Priest loses it, that someone else can cash it in. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because when you cash it in, there's already a name on the contract, presumably, in there, and it should be Damian Priest since he won the match. So there should not be really a lot of harm done in not keeping as watchful eye on it as maybe predecessors have. But then again, Kevin, this is the world of professional wrestling where stealing a briefcase could indeed entitle you to the match inside the said briefcase. So I'm not really sure. I don't spend too much time thinking about it. I mean, if he's careful with the briefcase, if he's not, obviously that played a little part in the most recent storyline where Sami Zayn was forced to give the briefcase back. You would think that maybe that would cause Damian Priest to watch things more closely, but maybe not.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking as Ryan was asking the question, I thought to myself, just like the tag team relinquish belt policy that seems to be a very gray area, it seems that the same applies to the prop that is the Money in the Bank briefcase, where, like you, Greg, I would assume it's just a prop and the contract has his name on it. And so you might need the briefcase as the symbol to say, yeah, I want to cash this contract in, but otherwise who cares? But again, we've seen other holders of the briefcase. Didn't the Miz have it at one point and somebody stole it from him and it became this whole deal where he had to actually win back what he had already earned. They pick and choose when they want it to actually be the thing and when it just represents the thing. But to Ryan's credit in asking the question, if it's something that you should be more careful about, then maybe don't bring it out if you're just going to be out, unless the idea is, well, you never know if just sitting out at ringside, he could decide to cash it in. But also, they're not always wrestling Roman Reigns and or Seth Rollins every time. And then the other part of that is, do you even need the briefcase if the New Day can just make one out of a to-go lunch container and claim it to be the same thing? So,
yeah. Yeah, it's complicated is the answer, I think. Ryan, thanks so much for the phone call this week. Appreciate it.
Okay, yeah. Otis lost it to the Miz in a court case, I believe, too. So it seems like
and that's what it was, some sort of court case, yes.
Oh, dear. that was definitely a different time, I believe, in WWE. So that's hopefully those days are left behind. All right, let's do a little bit more here on Full Gear, and then we'll get to Sean. We've got Orange Cassidy versus Jon Moxley, AEW International Championship. Kind of a a left turn, I guess. Moxley loses to Phoenix. Phoenix loses to Cassidy. Cassidy and Moxley go at it again. And I just think the dichotomy between Cassidy and Moxley is just so fun. You have Orange Cassidy, who is, you know, this slacker character, I guess, who can't even put three words together to do an interview. And you have, on the other end of the spectrum, John Moxley, who everything he does is intense. And so you can see how these two might not get along. And so I think it's just so fun to see them constantly butting heads, constantly battling. They had a really good match, main event, recently. And so I'm expecting another really good match here. Moxley cleared from the concussion that he suffered. So we'll see where they go with the international title here. But I mean, I'm thinking Moxley here, but I don't even think AEW is exploiting it for all they could. Just the sheer difference between Orange Cassidy and John Moxley, I think it would be a lot more fun if they really shined more of a light on that. Because they are, I mean, you can't get two more different characters.
Well, and yeah, I was just thinking if these two were in the rival promotion, they would have already done one of those, like, therapy series is where they're both in, you know, a family therapy room and the therapist is trying to get Moxley to like dial it down a little and trying to get Orange to dial it up a little. And the hilarity that would ensue from to the odd couple, if you will. But I think, you know, I too think that there is something to Moxley holding a belt. Now I've heard Wade and various co-hosts lament just how many belts exist in AEW and how little some of them mean. But a belt is still a belt, and I think that Moxley holding one seems to be something that crowds respond far better to. My big question about Mr. Moxley comes purely from a real-life perspective where certainly he has had some big injuries lately, and concussions are something that They are multiplicative in their happening, right? So like the next one does more damage than the one before. And so I almost wonder if he's prone to them. Is it something where you want to try to create a program around him as a champ if the next one's right around the corner and they'll have to find a way to take it off of him again? So I worry about him from a real life perspective. But I do think, if I were to put my wager on a winner, I would put it on him too, just because, like I said, I think the crowds really do eat up him being a champ, and it gives him something else to be intense about. And certainly riling up fans would play into AEW's hand right now. So, yeah, I guess we'll find out for sure, but I think there are some reasons why you would want to put it back on him, because I think Orange Cassidy is well supported with or without a belt, and I think his act doesn't necessarily need one. It seems more like a burden to him than anything else, because it's one more thing he's got to carry out to the ring, but I imagine it will be a very entertaining match nonetheless.
For sure. Adam Page takes on Swerve Strickland in a Texas death match. This is another one of those matches that's controversial. I talked about it with Wade last night on the Collision post show, but you have, you know, this storyline sort of jumped the shark when Swerve Strickland invaded Adam Page's home to no consequences, legally or from AEW. And so that's really where it's hard to get back into the pro wrestling of the storyline once they've crossed that line. And so, you know, again, this is going to be a really good match. I thought Adam Page's promo setting the stage for the Texas death match last night on Collision was hit or miss. I thought there were some parts that I liked, certainly his delivery. I thought the content was a little too cute by half, to use a Wade Kellerism. So I think Strickland has really upped his game as a heel, and I appreciate that because I think, you know, 2024 could be the time when Swerve really breaks through as a main event level heel. But that, you know, even as this match is going on and it's going to be really good, Texas death match, it's hard for me to invest as much in the storyline because I do feel taken out of the moment by that home invasion. Was that a big step in the wrong direction for you as well, or did you not mind it as much?
No, well, here's the deal. I've learned in life that once you have a family and kids, everything hits different, right? Like I find myself crying at Disney movies I would have never cried at purely because I have kids now. But I think if I can remember back to the last time a home invasion angle was part of a story in the rival promotion, it wasn't really – it was not loved then either. And I guess I don't know why – they thought, well, we're going to put our own spin on it, and certainly they're going to see it differently this time around. Like, I just – yes, you want your storylines to feel real and feel authentic, but I think there's just some lines you don't cross. And I was a little put off by that, too. And also, I can already see Wade and Todd on the post-show roundtable saying that this was one of the matches that you could have shaved – 5 to 7 to 10 minutes off of it, and it still would have told the same story, because I do think this is going to go long. But there's something to be said for Adam Page winning with his own match skip. But I also think Swerve's got some really good momentum going, and it's one of those where I don't know that that momentum could survive a loss here. Like, I think it helps for him to tell his story to say, I beat you at your own game, essentially. So I think that it would help progress his storyline for Swerve to win. And in truth, I'll say I feel bad for Adam Page, but, like, talk about someone who's been treading water largely for the last little bit. Like, I don't want to – the comparison will not be super strong, but in a similar way, like, I want to compare him to Seth Rollins in a way where the question we ask about him is, who is Seth frickin' Rollins? Who is Hangman Adam Page? Like, I just feel like he doesn't really have the panache that he started with, and it's not all his fault, but, like, I don't know. I think that the smart money is with Swerve here just based on the momentum he's been building. So, I don't know. That's where I'm leaning on that one.
There are all kinds of predictions you can do for pay-per-views, but certainly AEW has given us the opportunity to predict the match that, as you said, the one that we'll be saying by the end of it, could have shaved 5-10 minutes off that, and it would have been just as good, or maybe even better. And so, worth noting as we go through this card, I think. We also have the Golden Jets, Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho, taking on the Young Bucks. Stipulation here is if the Young Bucks win, Jericho and Omega have to disband. If Jericho and Omega win, they get the Young Bucks tag title shot. So I just have a hard time with this one, Kevin. It's going to be a great match. I'm not worried about that. But the Young Bucks just do not come off great here. You know, they always seem to be whining about their friends hanging out with other people. And it's sort of a similar story to Roderick Strong and Adam Cole. You know, Roderick Strong doesn't like Adam Cole hanging out with MJF, and the Young Bucks don't like Kenny Omega hanging out with Chris Jericho. Didn't like Chris Jericho being in their locker room last week. And it just feels so sophomoric, and it feels so high school. And it's hard to like the Young Bucks. Maybe we're not supposed to like them, but it's hard to like them when they're acting like this. And I do think Jericho and Omega are more the baby faces here, the adults in the room, so to speak. But, you know, the Young Bucks sort of vacillate between babyface and heel quite often. And we're going to remember this the next time they try to turn babyface, that they're not as likable as they once were, I feel like. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they were never likable to some people. I don't know.
Well, I don't know about never. I think that prior to the beginning of AEW, they were the talk of the town for a lot of reasons, and they earned it. They worked very hard. I actually met them after the WrestleCon in the last New Orleans WrestleMania, and they chatted with me for probably 10 minutes and nothing about wrestling, all about marketing and merch and all that sort of thing. And so they certainly work hard, but as it pertains to the match, part of me wonders if I could be talked into the outcome of this match not being known yet. And I think a lot of that's going to have to do with whether it falls before the tag team four-way or after, because I don't necessarily want to see FTR, Young Bucks 3 or 4, wherever they're at. One of the other teams wins the four-way tag team championship, then maybe that's a matchup you do want to see the Young Bucks in. To be frank, I don't know that the fan base at large would be sad if Kenny and Jericho got a chance to challenge for a tag title in lieu of the Young Bucks, both because they're currently playing crybaby heels and nobody likes a crybaby, but also, too, for something fresh and not redone. But yeah, I agree. I think the fact that the Young Bucks haven't really leaned into one side of the ledger or the other for any long amount of time hurts them when there is that assumption of, well, when we go face again, people will just forget that we were sniveling babies. Well, unfortunately for you, you know, the internet and Twitter is forever and they won't. And I think that only hurts when you try to reestablish yourself as that good guy again, because it's like, well, wait a minute, where is all this all of a sudden coming from? So personally, I'd like to see Omega and Jericho win. I think that of the four teams that are in that tag team championship match, they could put on a good show with every single one of them. And I think, unfortunately, for where the Bucks are currently, a lot of that could feel like a broken record of sorts. So that's where I would put my weight behind.
I never would have imagined that, you know, back when FTR and the Young Bucks was a dream match that we could really only dream about, because FTR was in WWE and Young Bucks were in AEW. Who could have imagined that we'd be sitting here saying, you know, I'm not really sure I want another Young Bucks FTR match. I mean, it's just, is that a failure of AEW booking? Is that a failure of the Young Bucks characters that we just don't want to see them in that role? Well, where do you put the blame for that? Because I mean, that's just, when you said it, it almost took my breath away. And then I'm like, you know what? I can see where he's coming from by saying that.
You know, I in the world of fence sitting, I would say that it's probably a little bit of both. Because of course, no one would they are a human highlight match, right? They work well together. Their styles complement each other. There is no denying the quality of the work that they can do when they're both motivated and ready to go. But I think in the interest of, again, you know, the last three Marvel movies where you could say, well, you could have trimmed 45 minutes off of that movie and it would have been just as good. I think that their first two matches, for as good as they were, sort of, I felt that one, now I'm going to get them confused, the first two, but one of them, well, they were both long, but one of them carried really good energy. And I think the placement of the other was such that the crowd was very dead for them. And so dead plus long equals groaning and maybe a lack of appreciation for what was done. But I also think, too, you know, if we really want to rewind 4 years now, despite the fact that when AEW started and many people were very excited about Cody and Omega and the Bucks and Jericho and Hangman being like the fire starters of all this, as much as I'm sure there was that idea of, well, let's not put all of us in championships because people will expect that. I think the argument has come up time and time again of, well, maybe you should have to establish a little order up front, and then you can start playing the role of the veteran who's going to put other people over. And so I think that the luster of who the Bucks are just in their role, it seems like they either tap themselves or they are tapped to be the key tag team, maybe far more inconsistently than you would expect for being, you know, EVPs of the company. And when you sort of play that roller coaster, I think it's hard for fans to fully invest in that idea of, oh, well, I guess they're going to give them a little bit of a push here because they need it to whatever. And it's so unfortunate that that's happening against FTR, where it's like, yeah, people should want to beat down the door to see that match again. And I just, at least in my opinion, I don't know that I want or need another one of those, and I would love to see a little bit of freshness in it.
Well, just to reset things a little bit here, this is Wrestling Night in America. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. Being joined by PWTorch.com contributor Kevin Catani, and we are previewing the upcoming AEW Full Gear pay-per-view. You can reach us via email, WNIALivecast@gmail.com, and via phone when we're on the air here live, if you're listening live, 515-605-9345. We now go to Murfreesboro, Tennessee, where Sean is waiting for us. Sean, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America.
Greg, I'm glad to be back, man. It's good to talk to you. And I saw the professor was going to be on, and I, you know, you guys are two of the best, and professor always does a great job, and I appreciate you guys both. How are you guys doing tonight? Always good to talk to you.
Doing well, thank you.
I am fantastic, Sean. It is so great to hear your voice again.
Man, I appreciate that. It means a lot. Professor, it really does. First, Greg, I'm sorry for your Jaguars tonight. Today was one of those days where you ran into a team that was really hungry and really wanting to prove a point, and boy, did they today. So I don't feel that the Jaguars are a bad team. It was just a bad day, and so that was unfortunate. But at least my Packers are worse than you guys this year. We stink really bad, so not much to go with that.
Well,
is that what you thought, too, with the game today? It was just the 49ers just were mean and nasty, and that was just kind of a game they were going to show it in?
They've had a couple of losses like that this year. They lost to Houston this year. And, you know, they either seem to come out like gangbusters and play a heck of a game, or they just get whooped. And I think the most prophetic thing you can say about the NFL these days is it's a week-to-week league. And very rarely does you know, something that happens one week carry over to the next week. Every week is a new week, and sometimes there's just no rhyme or reason why things happen. So when you have as competitive of a league as the NFL does, with, you know, anyone can win in any given week, except maybe the Giants. Sorry, Frank, but you know, this can happen. And, you know, obviously San Francisco, you know, they got some guys back today that really helped, and Jacksonville was, you know, it's, I think the strengths of San Francisco perfectly matched up with the weaknesses of Jacksonville. Jacksonville struggled with the offensive line, especially the interior, whereas San Francisco has a very strong defensive line. Jacksonville has some problems with turnovers on offense, and yeah, San Francisco is the kind of team that takes advantage of that. So it was just a recipe for disaster here today, and it most certainly was.
Yeah, it wasn't. And I'll say Houston is the real – I mean, C.J. Stroud's the real deal. So I that's not too big of a loss right now, because I just think he is showing everybody why he – I thought he should have been a top quarterback pick, and I think he's kind of showing why he should have been that. Even though Bryce Young, I think, will be fine, he's just on a really bad team right now, and that's unfortunate for him right now. But, Kevin, I forgot, are you a football guy?
I am an NFL guy, and the Tampa Bay Yucks are my team. They were victorious against the Titans today, which made me happy. But despite a couple of Brady years and a Warren Sapp, Mike Allstott, Brad Johnson-led Super Bowl, we've had a lot of heartbreak in our history as well. So, it's funny, Greg, I'll loop you in. My best friend is a Jaguars fan. And every year we have a bet with each other where we essentially bet against our team, openly admitting that our team is going to do worse than the other. And so whichever team does in fact do worse, they are the recipient of lunch from the better performing team.
So at least you get something out of your team's poor performance. I like that.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's great.
Very good.
I need to get that. I need to do that with my best friend. And funny part, I'm a Packers fan, and he's a Bears fan, which makes it even funner, more fun, because I usually get to beat his team, which makes it even more good for me. But now I'll get back to AEW. The funny part about the AEW show, not get the show, only because if it was a Sunday, I'd get the show personally, because I like this card a lot better than I've liked a lot of the last few cards that they've had. even though I'm not a fan of what AEW's done as a whole, Saturday night for me is just college football. It's hard to miss college football for me. There's so many good games that are going on. It's hard to, as much as I love wrestling, it's hard to focus on that when I have college football on. And there's so many games to DVR. I can't watch that many games on DVR. It's just hard to do it. And so I probably will not get the show only because of that. But I wanted to talk about the card because I'm very intrigued by some of the matches. But I wanted to ask a main question. I think a lot of the frustration for me is a lot of these matches, like you have with the tag team, I'm using that as an example. Like, I feel like they've done stuff with Rush and Jalisco here recently, but I just feel like they end up having matches where they put all these teams in a match. And I just wish they would do more of the, like, Hangman Swerve and the, you know, like, just do more one-on-one matches and more one-on-one tag matches. I just think they're trying to get so many of these tag team guys on it, to make it a, you know, a crazy match and all this stuff, which is fine. But I don't think they need to have a four-way tag team match. I just think you could do Ricky Starks and Big Bill against FTR, and then whoever wins that, then you build to, you know, you have LFI and you have House of Black. Just do those, you know, just build to those next feuds. And I just feel like they just try to get all these people onto these shows because and make them extra long, which they already are now. So what do you think about that? Or you, do you think they do that too much, or you think they do an okay job of that? Where are you guys on that with them?
No, I agree with you. And in fact, when I was writing down the card here in my notebook to talk about tonight, I did think about that for this tag match. I mean, the lucky thing is you've got how many matches? 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 matches, counting the pre-show match. And that multi-person tag match is really the only match of its kind. You have the TBS title, which will be defended in a triple threat. But you've got, you know, Omega and Jericho versus the Young Bucks is a straight-up tag match. Paige Strickland singles, Cassidy Moxley singles. You got a six-man tag match. You got another singles match. You got a tag team match or a handicap match with MJF. And then you've got the main event. So I think there are shows, Kevin, where AEW kind of overdoes it with the multi-person and the multi-tag matches. And I would personally prefer a single two-on-two match just because I'm a fan of the tag team genre, and I think the psychology of a tag team match, you lose a lot of what makes it interesting when you throw four tag teams in there rather than do it one team versus one team. And so, but for this particular card, I would rather have it, but I'm just glad the rest of the card doesn't look the same way, that there's enough variety in there.
Well, I agree. And what I was going to say to that, Sean, is either we'll give you a four-team tag team champ match, or we'll add three more matches to the show, another hour to the runtime, and have that. that's kind of when I was looking at the card too. That's what I thought too. Was I'm actually really surprised that at least as of right now, there's only 8 matches on the main card. Where I think the last couple of pay-per-views they had over 10. And so I wonder if this was a chance to get a lot of, you know, get a few more guys that have had regular storylines into a show without having to add more matches to the card. And that was sort of my thought behind it. But, you know, I think based again on the breakdown of the types of matches, I'm not so put off by it. Certainly, as we all know, three-way, four-way, X-way matches, you know, always sort of put the champs at the disadvantage because they don't have to lose to lose. And so there's always that element of that. But I don't think that's anything that we don't accept as wrestling fans. But certainly you're right. You know, as good as it almost – I don't know if – I might be a stretch in making this assertion, but I almost wonder, too, if when companies do the multi-way matches – is that an indication of maybe the faith or respect they have in the title holders, right? Because you wouldn't ever dream, or not dream, but you wouldn't ever think that a starting spot for an FTR Tag Team Championship defense would be a multi-way. It would be a 1v1 thing. But because it's Bill, you know, Bill and Ricky Starks, is this maybe a show of, well, we need a little more firepower in there to really help carry the overall match? I don't know. Like I said, I'm not super strong behind that assertion, but I wonder too if that's something that they might be trying to cover for, knowing that maybe people aren't super jazzed about an FTRV Big Bill and Ricky Starks match, and so let's throw a little more firepower in there.
Yeah. Any follow-up from you, Sean? Or next question?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm with you. And that's what I'm saying. Like, this card, per se, is definitely better in that regard. I think they've gone to that those crutches, you know, on past cards. I think they've done better. Like, the four-way tag, I mean, obviously, you know, I know it'll be a great match, and I'll look forward to everybody's coverage on it. I think it'll be really good. But I'm curious, who do you guys think wins? Do you guys, I mean, do you think Ricky and Bill will keep the titles? Just because they're kind of on it, doing some good stuff with them right now, or do you think they're going to go back to FTR and just do, since they could, will have great matches and their, you know, fans are behind them, are they, do you think they'll just go that route and kind of work from there?
I would like to see Starks and Bill keep the titles. I like what they've done. I like that pairing. I think Ricky Starks deserves a focus of some kind, and having him as one half of the tag champs gives him that. And Big Bill, I think, is someone who is really hitting their stride in AEW, really starting to feel a lot more comfortable with their character in the AEW environment. You know, he had a successful run in Impact, really kind of revitalized himself there, comes to AEW, and I think he's done a nice job so far. He gives the division something different. You know, there's not a lot of guys his size in the tag division, so having that dichotomy between Ricky Starks and Big Bill in terms of their size, in terms of their style, I think is very valuable to have in the tag division. So I'd like to see them keep it here, and that's not to say that the other tag teams aren't deserving or aren't intriguing in their own way, but I don't feel like the Starks-Big Bill tag team has really been as fleshed out as it could be so far. Kevin, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, I agree with you. And anytime, if I'm trying to be like hyper analytic about sort of the booking logic behind it, maybe with the exception of LFI, I don't think the other two, House of Black and FTR, don't need the belts to maintain their following and their momentum. And I think keeping, you know, it's one of those where, like, I would say, like, as I think about reviewing, you know, an instant replay, like in the NFL, you know, unless there's overwhelming evidence to overturn it, you can't. So unless there's an overwhelming need to put the belt on one of the belts on one of the other tag teams, if you feel Starks and Bill are doing what you need them to do and there's more story to tell, keep it on them and let them keep going. And I would totally be okay with that too. Now, as a Malakai Black slash Aleister Black fan from back in the NXT days, I always kind of want him to have a little more shine on him than he has lately. But my fanboyness aside, I would also be okay with them keeping the belts on Starks and Bill and letting them tell a few more stories that way.
All right, Sean, back to you. Anything else for us tonight?
Yeah, a few more matches I was going to ask you about. The second was the obviously you talked, just brought up the TBS Championship match. And I kind of want to go into that a little bit. Number one, I don't think it should be a three-way. I think it should be Statlander and Julia. I don't. This thing, they're trying to. I like that they're trying to tell a story in this few of these women for the TBS title, but I'm just not into it at all. There's no crowd interest in it. I don't think anybody's really that into it, honestly. Sky Blue, I think they're trying with her, but there's just no charisma there. There's just not much there. She's not that good in the ring yet. Her storytelling just doesn't feel like it's that. She technically turned on Julia, and so I don't know where they're going with it. I mean, she's going to beat Red Velvet because they've done nothing with Red Velvet. I mean, she's going to be in the three-way. But I don't know. I don't like the story. I mean, Julia, and that's where I was going with Julia. She is the one person here that I do think is on a good trajectory. I don't love her yet, but I'm definitely getting there. Like, she's getting better in the ring. The fans are definitely behind her. Like, I'm starting to get more behind her. I feel like I'm on a journey with her. And so right here, I think they have to put, which you were saying, Greg, on the last pay-per-view, they should have put it on Julia. I definitely think they have to put it on her now. If they don't put it on her now, I don't know where they're going to go. And Statlander, to me, is just, again, there's not much there for me. I'm not digging it. I think they've tried, but it's been a swing and a miss. So I think they have to put the title on Julia here. What do you guys think about the build to the match and the match itself?
Yeah, this is another topic I touched on with Wade last night after Collision. I generally agree on Chris Statlander. I don't think they've capitalized on her TBS title win to tell more of a story of who she is. You know, she was the one who was handpicked by Tony Khan to beat Jade Cargill to end Jade Cargill's streak. And we don't know a lot more about Chris Statlander and her journey today than we did when she was challenging Jade Cargill. And I think that's a mistake. I think the fans just don't have that connection with her. I'll disagree with you a little bit on the Julia Hart, Sky Blue stuff. I agree. I think Sky Blue beats Red Velvet. They have a match this week to determine who's the third person in that match. But I think the stuff with Julia Hart, I think she's gotten a lot better. I think her promos have gotten a lot better. She's another one like Big Bill who's a lot more comfortable in her character right now. And the whole mist thing and the eye paint, I'm intrigued by that. Like, and I get that it's not for everybody, but I think it's interesting the turn that happened to Julia Hart where she goes from smiling cheerleader babyface to this brooding heel, and we're seeing sort of that same transition with Sky Blue. It's interesting to me. So I'm going to give that a shot. And so, Kevin, I have some criticisms of Statlander. I think she's okay in the ring, but from a character standpoint, really lacking where I would like to see her at this point. And then Julia Hart really improved in the ring, improved as a character, and I think the same thing largely with Sky Blue.
Yeah, and I would agree with all of that as well. I think Statlander is another one of those where you could very easily ask the question, who is she and what does she do? Like a little bit of identity, not crisis, but like lack of, and that's tough, especially with a champion. Like, I feel like a company should want their champions to be as defined as a character as they can be, both in sort of mission statement and intangible, you know, benefits, and also their tangible benefits. And I think, certainly she's shepherded the belt as Jade transitioned out of the company. But I would agree with Sean that I would love to see Julia get a run. And interestingly enough, Sky Blue, so where I live up in the upper Midwest, I'm about 2.5 hours away from the wrestling school that Sky Blue started at before she moved to AEW. And so I've actually been watching her longer than she's been in AEW. And I will agree that she's gotten better, but I think what I don't want to happen to her, because I've seen a lot of social media, not buzz, but like a lot of posts where she's very much using her attractiveness to sell her character. And I don't want that to become a one-trick pony element for her. Because I think she's improved, but I don't think she's improved maybe as quickly as she should based on who she was trained by up here in the Iowa, Illinois area, and now all of the time she's had an AEW. And mm-hmm. I want her to still be hungry, and I don't know if I wonder if there's a little bit of laurel resting based on the fact that she has a look that people are into, and maybe that's enough for her right now. Like, I just don't want her getting lost in that. But I would also be okay if Julia won the belt. And I think if you want to try to protect Statlander for any reason, then Sky Blue eats the pin. Or maybe even Red Velvet comes out and causes some sort of distraction, because the way she lost to Sky Blue was a schmozzy, you know, gimmicky end too. So I think there's a couple of different ways you could go with it, but ultimately I'd love to see Julia with the belt and let her see what she can do with it.
And back to you, Sean.
Yeah, and I wanted just to preface by saying, like, I do think Sky has gotten better. I don't think she's – she's bland to me. I don't know. I just don't see a lot there, and I want to be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I mean, I maybe there's something – there that I just haven't seen. I'm like, man, it'll just kind of bury upon, you know, come upon me, and I'll be like, wow, this is cool. But I don't know. I you know, again, I'm willing to let it play out and see where they go. But I wanted to go, last thing, I know you're going to talk about it, but I got to bring it up, the main event, MJF, Jay White. I guess here's kind of what I'm thinking. I've been really, you know, down on a lot of what they've done. Again, I'm just not really liking MJF as a babyface. I mean, as a whole, I just think as a heel, he's so much. I know the fans are behind him, and that's cool. Like, I'm behind me. I like MJF. The face run hasn't done it for me. The stuff with Max Caster, it's just awful to me. I don't like that at all. The fact that Jay White has the belt and still hasn't given it back, I'm with Wade on that. I think it's stupid. The fact he's defending a title he doesn't even have is just dumb to me. And so, but with Jay White, I feel like he got off to a slow start. I think they didn't define him really well at all at the beginning for quite a while. And I think they're really doing a better job, even though I personally don't love him with Juice and all those guys. I don't really love that, but I like that they're starting to give him a little bit more of an edge. You're starting to see that heel character come out. The promos have been really good. I've really enjoyed what he's been saying. And I'm torn on where they go because I think you have a lot on both sides. If you keep it on MJF, you either lead to the stuff they're doing with the devil thing with, you know, if it's a Cole, is it whoever it is, and they play into that. And he still has a lot of guys, like, again, with Samoa Joe, who I think is on a roll right now, and I would love to see Samoa Joe get a title run. I would love it. I think it'd be so good. He's one of my favorite people in wrestling. I just enjoy him so much. But then you have Jay White, who I think is on the right track, and if you put the title on him, he could run with it, and he could do so many good things, and he's got good faces he could go against. And so I'm really torn on where do they go in this. I think they're ultimately going to keep the title on MJF and just go with him. The fans are behind him, even though I don't like a lot of what he's done recently. But what do you guys think about everything? I'll put it all out there. And just where do you think they go? Who do you think wins?
I do think MJF wins. I like the pairing of Jay White and Juice Robinson a little more than you. I like Jay White as the serious-ish main eventer, and having Juice Robinson as sort of his jester in a way, who just exists to annoy people on Jay White's behalf. I think that's a good pairing. The guns I don't really get, like, and I've warmed up a little bit to that, but I thought that the guns being part of Bullet Club Gold sort of watered down that group. I didn't think they were there yet where they should be a part of a group as prestigious as that. I'm coming around a little bit to that, but I'm still not all the way there. I think Jay White is a main event level wrestler. I think he is a title, AEW title level wrestler. I just don't think now is the time. I do think, again, the status quo seems to be Tony Khan's choice until Adam Cole gets back and they can get back, pick up where they left off with where they were going with this storyline. I'm assuming this story between MJF and Adam Cole had several chapters left to go. There was an end game in mind. And based on Tony Khan's previous booking, he would rather wait and re-engage that when the time is right, as opposed to take a left turn when there's an injury that comes up and go a completely different direction. So I'm going to assume MJF wins here. You know, maybe we get a little bit more with the devil, maybe not a full reveal, but maybe we get a little more than we've been getting with that as sort of the next step in that story. But Kevin, I mean, MJF versus Jay White, do you think that Jay White is a – do you think he has a chance here?
Well, listen, anybody has a chance. But, you know, I think as you guys are talking, what makes me scratch my head a little bit is – I agree, Greg, with you that Jay White is a championship holding caliber guy. He certainly proved it in New Japan, and he certainly carries himself that way. What would make me sad to find out after the fact was that the directive from the office was we are literally going to tread water till Adam Cole is healthy again, purely to be able to tell that story when it's time. And I think that is the exact wrong reason to keep a belt or not a belt on anybody. And I think what would make me sad is why would you burn Jay White in a setting like this only to know, well, yeah, next year we're going to put the belt on him, but we really want to finish this story with Adam Cole. Well, listen, I've been around enough injury in sports that just because the doctor tells you 6 to 8 months, it could be longer. It could, you know what I mean? Like there isn't, it's not as computer driven as that. And if you're really going to just, you got to keep MJF credible, but also you want to keep the belt on him. How many top level guys are you going to potentially burn through just to be able to go back to a story that may well not pick up the interest that it had once Adam Cole does come back, that maybe you're going to stub your toe a few times to try to wait. And I'm not necessarily saying that ultimately means you have to put the belt on Jay White right now, but as someone who carried a lot of load in New Japan and hasn't yet really proved himself in AEW, do you want one of his first big matches on a pay-per-view to be a loss, again, presumably because, well, we just really want to wait to see how we can finish the story with Adam Cole. And I'm hoping that's not the reason, but there's been enough decisions made in the last little bit that it would seem very plausible that that's the operating mentality.
And I do think, again, as we talked about when we talked about the first match, the pre-show match, it is worth noting that MJF does face the Guns in the pre-show match. So that could play a role in the story that is told in the main event and could give MJF an out of sorts if he does lose, whether it's the Guns rough him up during the match or after the match or something happens in that match that leads to him not being 100% in the main event, which could cause him to lose the title. So that story is something they could follow up on as well. Sean, anything else for us tonight?
Yeah, I guess the last thing I was going to bring up was the BCC. I wish we would just – I think Wade probably might have brought this up at some point, and I agree with, you know, everything about it as far as – I just want us to know who the BCC is. I want to know, are they heels? Are they faces? Are they what? I just feel like Moxley, when he's been wrestling, and especially Claudio lately, they're just back and forth. They're just – like he's maybe a heel wrestling against a face, but then he's a face wrestling against a heel. It's like I wish they would just do a better job of defining – I want Moxley, Claudio, and them to be on their own kind of in a way, honestly, now, because I just feel like it really hasn't really gone anywhere, honestly. But with them, if they're going to keep them together, I wish they would define who they are. Like, let us know who they are, and let us either cheer for them or boo them. One or the other. Let's not – no ifs, ands, or buts about it, one way or the other. That's all I really had to bring up. But, Greg, I appreciate what you do for the tour. Professor, always good to talk to both of you guys. Thank you all for taking my call.
Thank you, Sean. Always a pleasure to hear from you. You know, on the subject of the BCC, Kevin, you know, I think when they lost William Regal – they really lost their center and their focus, and I think that sort of sent them into this nebulous heel slash babyface slash whatever we need them to be this week. And, you know, you have Claudio sometimes who's a heel, and Moxley sometimes is a babyface. See, I'll put the quarter in the jar for that one. That's even worse than screwing up Edge and Adam Copeland after all this time with Moxley. But, no, I think that the loss of Regal – really, they kind of lost their leader in a way, and they lost their – I mean, the name of the group was named after William Regal, the Blackpool Combat Club. And so something was lost in translation when Regal left, and I don't think they've ever really found it. I don't think they've really found – I think they have a purpose. You know, they are who they are. They're these fighters who are, you know, all about wrestling itself and getting better and stuff like that. But – you know, that is something that could be a babyface or a heel, depending on how you utilize it. And I think Moxley has even said in interviews, look, we're not babyface or heel. We're just these guys, and sometimes we face babyfaces, sometimes we face heels, which is great. But when you do post-match attacks and you do interference and you cut heel promos, I mean, you're obviously a heel at that point. And then it's very hard to go back and be a babyface facing heels a couple weeks later. So that's kind of my take. I do agree with Sean. I'm not sure how much of a big, you know, on the list of AEW problems right now, I'm not sure how high up that one is. But what's your take on the BCC as they stand today?
Yeah, I think I agree with you. And Sean, thanks for calling in. It is always good to talk to you. You know, I think that's the thing. And I always hear Wade in the back of my head when I'm thinking of groups like the BCC, because even though life is a shade of gray, and even though, excuse me, even though, you know, values and beliefs change over time, you know, wrestling operates far better when we know which side of the ledger you're on. And I agree. I think William Regal was the voice. He was the heart and soul. He was sort of the attitude in that group from a from sort of a macro perspective.
He
and
set
so
the
they
tone
definitely
for
lost.
He really did.
Yeah, for sure. For sure he did. And I think it's okay to be an assemblage of guys who just want to fight, which is clear for all of those guys. But I think they're chameleoning in all of the worst ways and not in all of the ways that you might want them to based on the stories you're trying to tell. And so you're right. It's tough when week one, they're fighting bad guys. And so they take on a more good guy-ish aura. But then the next week, they're fighting good guys because of a fight that one of the group members picked. And now you're having to now boo them. But like, and I just think the inconsistency does not play well for fans who want to get behind a group of any kind and just be behind them and support them when you don't really know who they are. And those guys are way too talented to have to fight against that sort of, well, we like you, but we don't really know what your group is about because it's not really a thing. And so I feel bad. But I think that, yeah, a lot of the wind did go out of their sails when Regal left. And not that they should have technically disbanded as soon as that happened, but I don't think, I'm going to speak for myself, but I imagine I speak for others when I say, I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world to now break them up and just sort of let them go do singles or tag or whatever things as unaffiliated guys, because even though I know that AEW loves factions, it's okay to have one less and just have singles or tag wrestlers that just want to beat people up.
We'll close tonight with an email from John, WWE focus, so we will get into some WWE discussion here on the show. He goes, hi, Greg and co-host. Hope you're both doing well. First topic, is WWE deliberately sabotaging SmackDown, and what would you do to breathe life into it? I didn't watch the Saudi show due to obvious reasons, but I've regularly watched Raw and SmackDown, aside from last week's go-home shows, for that very event, and SmackDown has felt very scattershot and quite messily booked for a while. I don't know why WWE would want to sabotage one of its own shows, so they're probably not, but it feels like one show, Raw, has more urgency, far more consistently compelling and mostly well-written stories, and more engaging performers. I mentioned a few weeks ago how the women's division on SmackDown feels this way, but I've also felt that compared to Raw, SmackDown as a whole just doesn't feel as cohesive or even as important. Also, I want to clarify, SmackDown has still been mostly good and the performers themselves are still good, but it just doesn't feel like there's all that much urgency, and it only feels like it has momentum when Roman is around. When he isn't, occasionally there are very strong weeks, but it often feels like SmackDown, and I don't mean to sound too harsh, is going through the motions. It's still watchable when I fast forward through some stuff on DVR and get to the good stuff, but I cannot imagine watching the full 2 hours, whereas it's the opposite feeling with Raw. So the following is more to do with the lack of urgency, cohesion, and general scattershot feel of SmackDown rather than saying it's bad. LWO has been compelling. There's good matches every week, and LA Knight has been fun to watch. It's still an enjoyable show when I can forward through all the fluff on the DVR and concentrate on only the most important segments. But it doesn't feel hugely consequential in its entirety most weeks, so in turn I don't watch the whole show unless I feel something truly important is happening and storylines are being advanced in a way that makes sense. Firstly, the obvious, an absentee champion, and likely mostly absentee U.S. champion. Secondly, the women's division. Thirdly, the lack of nuanced characters and storytelling, aside from some of the stuff they've done with the LWO. That's really the extent of what I feel SmackDown lacks right now, but I don't think it's a coincidence that Fox dumped SmackDown after certain objectives were not met, and I think WWE may have felt the lack of confidence for a show that for a long time after Fox acquired the rights to air it was very strong throughout, especially with the Bloodline. Raw has the Judgment Day, especially Rhea Ripley, Jey Uso, Cody, Drew McIntyre, Gunther, Seth, Nakamura, Becky, and Sammy at the top, and even interesting supporting players like Alpha Academy, Ludwig Kaiser, and even made the likes of Natalya and DIY feel more interesting. SmackDown at the top, I could name Roman when he's around, LA Knight, Paul Heyman, a non-wrestler, and Ray Santos Escobar and Zelina Vega from the LWO as being compelling and booked strongly, and then a bunch of people like Bianca, Asuka, Jimmy Uso, Grayson Waller, who have been okay and entertaining enough, but felt like they've either been directionless or don't have much great material to work with. So the question, do you consider both main roster shows to be close or far apart in terms of the criteria I laid out, urgency, strength of writing, and strong and compelling characters? Yeah, when John lays it out like that, I can sort of see where he's coming from. I do think the new damage control group is hopefully going to breathe some new life into the SmackDown Women's Division and some other things going on there. But I think all of it really comes down to the lack of Roman Reigns. When Roman Reigns is on the show, it feels important, and the Bloodline storyline moves forward in a substantial way. When Roman Reigns is not on the show, I think it lacks the Bloodline storyline specifically, and, you know, that's the umbrella that covers all of SmackDown. The Bloodline storyline lacks that sense of urgency. It's just kind of Jimmy Uso running around and Paul Heyman giving him looks and talking to his phone saying, call Roman Reigns. You know, so I think there's that part of it. And then, you know, the LWO moved forward this week with Santos Escobar turning on Rey Mysterio, so I would expect that to be a big story going forward. So there are pieces in place on SmackDown, but I do understand where John is coming from. What's your take on the overall state of SmackDown from a week-to-week basis, what John's talking about there, Kevin?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think not to put Seth on the same level as Roman, from both of them are the top of their show, but I think there is something to be said for a champion of the brand that is consistently on television. Excuse me. So whether or not Roman is wrestling or not, needing to be there. And so, you know, I think that you've hit the nail on the head that in the weeks that he's not there, certainly they tell stories with other players, but he's the leader of that show, good, bad, or otherwise. And I think in a similar way, you know, if you think about Tiger Woods and his prime, you know, they would do analysis all the time on what's the viewership and spending and sponsorship levels when he's in a tournament versus when he's not. And it was like staggeringly different. And so I think in that way, you know, did – in Roman's last contract re-up, you know, did they maybe hurt themselves in guaranteeing him a little more schedule freedom, knowing that they were going to build so prominently around him, where good, bad, or otherwise, Seth is on every show, fighting on every show, telling you why being that kind of a champion is important to him. And I think that for casual fans, never mind the hardcore folks that already drink the Kool-Aid, but for the casual fans, I think that means something if you know you're going to tune in week to week and see the people you want to see versus hoping that Roman is going to show up 2 weeks in a row.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Like I said, a lot of it comes down to Roman Reigns and his presence on the show. When you're built up to be the star and WWE treats you as such, when you're not there, it just feels like there's a sense of treading water. John's next question, Drew McIntyre and his excellent booking of late. He says, as I said earlier, I didn't watch the Saudi show, but everything he's done on Raw recently has been very interesting and multi-layered. He actually has nuance and motivations which are logical, realistic, and with layers you can peel away. He doesn't want to be the hero in shining armor anymore who saves everyone, but he still wants to be a good guy who the fans can get behind with a moral compass. He wants to be a different kind of good guy. He isn't afraid to be brutally honest with others, like telling Sami Zayn he doesn't know what it feels like to be a world champion, and he is very open about how he feels without being a jerk. He's tremendous, a tremendous babyface who has flaws that we as an audience can understand. I'd keep him as a babyface with an edge. He is making a lot of great points that I am agreeing with. I feel like they're heading to a match with Jay and possibly Cody at some point, but he could also take the world title off of Seth. Question, what do you think of Drew's booking of late as a babyface going forward, and who do you envision as his opponent for WrestleMania, whether he's facing a babyface or a heel, or is a babyface or heel himself? I do think we have to stipulate to the fact that, to my knowledge, Drew McIntyre has not signed a contract extension. I don't know if they added injury time or what, but, you know, that may play a factor in even whether he's on WrestleMania, whether he's with WWE at that point. I do love, you know, to get to John's question, I do love Drew's booking. I agree that the nuance – it's not shades of gray. It's nuance, and I think there's a difference between those two. The nuance that they're booking Drew with is excellent, and I think he's doing a really nice job with it, because that can be a hard character to pull off, a baby face who tends to act kind of heelish sometimes, but Drew does it in a way that keeps him as a baby face. And so I like what they've done. As far as an opponent for WrestleMania, you know, that's really hard to say. It's so far out. You know, so much can happen between now and then. Characters can catch fire. You know, certainly you look at a guy like Sami Zayn, you look at a guy like Jey Uso, maybe he's teaming. Maybe he comes around on Jey Uso and he ends up teaming with Jey Uso, maybe even in Sami Zayn in a multi-man match. I don't know. It's too far out for me to say, but if he continues this trajectory and is able to stay a babyface through all it, I think he'll have a prominent match at WrestleMania. Kevin, what do you think about Drew McIntyre's character and the potential matches he may have at WrestleMania?
Yeah, I am a Drew fan. I have been since he came back to WWE. I got to see him a few times live in NXT, and so I want him and need him to be a top guy, purely for my fandom. But, you know, I'm hopeful, because I have also not read or heard that he has re-signed yet, that maybe this current direction maybe was a condition made by him saying, listen, give me a chance to explore this character a little bit, and if I like where it's going and it's well-received and it's getting me further down the line, then let's talk re-signing. But if it flops or you're not happy with it or whatever, then maybe it's time for me to go away again. Mm-hmm. And maybe he's looking for a little more creative control in his own character. And so I hope that if that's what this is, that goes well. Because, yeah, I don't think he's in WrestleMania without a new contract. Mm-hmm. And so I think that kind of has to happen. But if it does, you know, I could see him in four or five matches that could really be something to build up and book and tell a good story. But I think as I might tell my students who I help plan schedules for, speculation at this point might be a waste of time until we hear that he has signed that contract. Mm-hmm. Because it could all be moot by the end of the year, or we could be celebrating the fact that, you know, he's going to be in it and ready to rock and roll. So.
Awesome. Well, Kevin, I appreciate you joining me here tonight to preview Full Gear. It was great talking to you once again. I'll give you an opportunity before we let you go to plug your social media where fans can follow you and your work for The Torch.
Sure. Well, thank you. It is always, always a pleasure to be asked, Greg. Thank you. I look forward to doing it again soon. You can find me on Twitter at KP Catani, C-A-T-T-A-N-I. I love talking wrestling. I love talking other nerd events such as Magic the Gathering and Dungeons and Dragons. And I also love, on a more serious note, talking emotional intelligence and brain health. So feel free to interact with me on any or all of those topics in the digital space. And I just look forward to the next time to be a part of this, Greg. I really thank you for it.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thank you, Kevin. All right. We will be back next week with Wrestling Night in America after Full Gear goes off the air. So that'll be Saturday night. But there will be a different co-host. Or a different host, I should say, next week. I will be off getting married, actually, in Jamaica. So I feel like that's a pretty good reason to not be here for Full Gear. I know that we have Brandon LeClaire scheduled, as usual. He's our, you know, our permanent co-host on pay-per-view days, but we don't have someone lined up quite yet to host. So I'm sure that will be taken care of during this week. If I hear of who it'll be, certainly I'll let you all know on social media at Greg M. Parks. But I know Wade is hard at work finding someone to fill my shoes for the post Full Gear show. That'll be next Saturday night right here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. So again, thank you for everybody for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.